Today, in this now post-election space, we start a new series. The series is called Healing Grace, Pathways to Move Forward. You may be in that space of how do we move forward? How do we move forward together as a church? How do we move forward together as a nation? Over the next 3 weeks, we're going to give some framework for that. If you're looking for some reading right off the bat, I want to first mention that our series, as the pastors have put the series together, is based at a basis on the work of Reuben Job, retired. He actually has passed away in recent years, but he has a small book, and you may have read it before. I've read it before. It's called Three Simple Rules, A Wesleyan Way of Living. It's this big, folks. You can get it for $5.99 new on Amazon, or you get it used for much cheaper. I pulled it off my shelf several weeks ago. I reread it. And then election night, as the results were coming in, this is what I was reading. I was reading it kind of in light of what was going on in the nation, and I was done by like 11 o'clock. So it's a quick read. It's a read that I commend to you, and we're going to be speaking about this Wesleyan way of grace. Bishop Job was, some of you read the Upper Room devotional, or you read resources from the Upper Room. He was the editor of the Upper Room for many years, bishop from Iowa, and he was a bishop that was known for his spiritual leadership and for grounding the United Methodist Church, and in some ways, in the early 2000s, renewing the work of the Methodist Church in the Wesleyan way with what we're going to talk about over the next few weeks. So I commend that reading to you. We're going to be in the space of talking about the way of Christ and the way of our heritage in John Wesley over the next few weeks. Before we get to that, though, I have to say that this has been a rough week. I'm just going to say that for many reasons. A rough week, maybe for you, maybe not. A rough week to be a pastor. I think there's some times that we just stand before you and say, it was a rough week because people have been crying to us this week, okay? Crying in joy. But sometimes those tears come with disappointment because of the way that people have felt in terms of a reaction, their reaction to the election. There have been people crying in despair. And one of the things that I want to just lay before us, if there are people in this room, and I just want to claim this, that feel very differently about the election here at Flores United Methodist Church, they feel very differently about the election. And when things come with a lot of feelings, we feel that. You know, we have our own political opinions, but when you all are upset or you're upset with each other or we see our nation moving in directions that seem to be pulling apart, we feel that. One of our past bishops, Bishop Joe Pennell, said to us when we were young pastors, he said, there's some Sundays that you just don't want to go and preach. And I won't say that that is this Sunday for me. I felt all those feelings this week, and I've had literal tears shed on my shoulder this week. I want to say this is a Sunday where I feel like I have to rise to the call and do the only thing that I know to do, and that's point us to the ways of Jesus in the midst of where we are. Because all these things have happened this week. There's been rejoicing, and there's been lament. There's been some biting back and forth. People have told me they've unfriended people. People have told me they don't want to speak to certain people ever again. And that's people from this church speaking those words. So this place, it's not an easy space, but I come with the only message that I know this morning. That's the message of Jesus. And that's where we're going to root ourselves over the next few weeks together. And that's where we always root ourselves, really, is in the way of Christ. So some things we need to claim. It's been a rough week in that tension, whether you celebrate it or not. And I know that some of you and many of you have. Part of the reality is if you were a supporter of the now president-elect, part of the reality is there's a whole group of people that are going to be opposed to that support. And if you were not a Trump supporter and you were a Harris supporter, then there are those on the Trump side that are never going to understand why you supported Harris. And we still have this place where we want to, and I've seen it this week, we want to pull to our corners. We want to pull to our corners and stay there. People have said to me, I don't want to speak to anybody that didn't vote the way that I did. And that concerns me. Because if we're in our corners and we continue along in an embittered place, particularly as a people that follow the ways of Jesus, that I'm concerned. I'm concerned if we embrace some of the stuff that frankly we saw in the election on both sides. If we embrace some of that meanness and negativity against one another, then how can we expect for a better future, regardless of who is in office? How can we expect for a better future for our children? And some people have asked me, how do I speak to my kids in this week with all this going on? And again, your best rooting and grounding is your faith and the way of Jesus. And we'll work this out as we move forward together. We can draw back from one another. We can draw back from one another, even in the community of Christ here. But I think that we can do better. I think there's things that we can do in this week and the weeks and months to come that are of Christ together as a church and hopefully as a nation. There is a way that we can help move forward. There's a pathway forward. We're going to be talking about this pathway to move forward, whether you're red or blue, or you were just apathetic about the whole thing and you're glad it's over. There's a way to move forward. And that doesn't mean that we abandon our passions or our parties or the people that we've supported. It doesn't mean that we abandon any kind of national allegiance. I'm going to say what it means is that we need to examine ourselves first. It's so easy, and that's what I saw this week. It's so easy for us to examine the other, but we have to examine ourselves. And when we do that, when we tune our hearts and our lives to the power of Christ at work in this world, as followers of Jesus, because that's who we are, then we have influence. We have the power of the Holy Spirit to influence, starting right in our circle, starting right in our families, starting with the commitments that we make to our children, just like we did to Allie a few minutes ago. And then outward into our families and our communities and our friendships and ultimately our nation and the world. Now remember back a couple weeks ago, I shared this slide with you about how Americans, this was pre-election in 2023, we have a negative opinion of politics. Maybe you shifted a little bit in the past week, but I really doubt it. Even if you were a Trump supporter, I think there's still this kind of negative pull that sits on the politic of America. The election hasn't changed that. We have, what we need to acknowledge is we've got this negative space that we feel and that we've been moving through for a number of years. This data was taken in 2023. That negativity is with us. The divide that we claim and the polarization, it's still there. That didn't heal over Wednesday morning when the political process, it started to roll. We can't stop that. It started to roll on Wednesday, and we've seen it roll since. So given this negative space that we've been in so long, what can we do? What can we do? And that's where we are. Given where we are, how can you live and influence the world towards something better? Till we don't feel so negative, we don't feel so polarized, we don't feel so divided, and we see a future with hope in the way of Christ among us. We've been reminded today of the words of Christ, right? It goes back to kind of some of the do unto others language we were talking pre-election. This Galatians chapter 5 calls us to love our neighbors, right? All the law can be summed up in the love of neighbors. You hear that in the Old Testament. Jesus spoke it. Here Paul is writing it, though. And Paul says it. He says, all can be summed up in loving your neighbor as yourself. But Paul's living in a context that's really divided. The church is having difficulty, the clashes between the Jews and the Gentiles. He's seeing polarization and division and the pain from it being lived out. And he adds this little bit to that, love your neighbors. He says, but if you devour each other, be careful that you don't get eaten up by each other. Can you read that with me, the bold part? But if you bite and devour each other, be careful that you don't get eaten up by each other. This is my worry when I say it's been a hard week. This is my worry as a pastor, and it may be yours too. This week brought about a lot of feelings, that crying with joy, the exuberance, and the despair. People were claiming hope again, and people were saying hope had left the nation. And that's all on the same street or in the same apartment building or on the same hallway at work. Reconciling our differences in emotion, you know, however we feel right now about the government and the politic and the leaders, that's some hard work. That's some hard work. And some of you, I know, are in spaces where you're doing that hard work. You're officials and you're trying to do that hard work of leading our government corridors forward. That is your work and your task, and God bless you. And I have to say, God bless all of you here in the space and online worshiping for being in church this morning, because we need this way of Christ so much, church. We need it. What we need to pay attention to is this biting and devouring that's all around us. It's still there. You saw it this week. You can't say you didn't. I mentioned rooting and grounding ourselves in the way of Christ. That's how our church was born. This Wesleyan way, this Methodist way, is that John Wesley saw an opportunity. An opportunity in a polarized England for people to step up. One of the things Wesley says is you don't give up. For John Wesley, every step in the Christian life did not end with a space of arrival, of just saying, I have arrived. So some of you, I know, when I start talking about Wesley, you're going to be like, I know John Wesley. She's up there speaking about John Wesley. I want you to be reminded that Wesley was always seeing us in a process of sanctification and being perfected. That there was an expectation that there's an opportunity to grow. I think there's an opportunity for the church to grow, the kingdom of God to expand in this present moment. We don't draw to our corners, either in celebration or despair. We lean in and we do the work of Jesus. Wesley preached this. He has a sermon I commend to you called On Faith. And as Wesley talked about the faith we have in Methodism, he said, even you who've attained a measure of perfect love, Wesley believed that you could really live in this way of loving your neighbor truly, that you really could dive deep and get in a perfected place of really living the way of Christ. But he said, you don't stop there, because the call of the Spirit, the voice of God tells you just to keep going forward. Keep going forward. Wesley would push us deeper in the space to follow Jesus. And that's what happened in the early Wesleyan movement. If I'm talking about Wesley and you're new to Methodism, the founder of this movement that birthed our denomination, the United Methodist Church, from the Church of England, he had a group of people that were optimistic about a hard society. That's where the roots of our tradition were born. Is they were optimistic, as there was a great divide between rich and poor. For those of you that know your Wesleyan history in the 17, 1800s in England on into America. And he saw that the people of God, if they truly focused around loving neighbor and doing the way of Christ, then the community and the nation could be transformed. And for Wesley, nations could be transformed. That's why he sent missionaries to America in the early revolutionary time. This optimism would spread as people loved those on the edge and on the margins, those that were hurting, those that were sick, those that were poor, those that were in prison. That's where Wesley sent the church, to people who were suffering in both England and America. The belief that a society could be transformed, that the people of Christ could come together and effect change in the world around them. Part of this theology was an ultimate hope that the way of God, that heaven would come close to earth, that there would be this reality of goodness between heaven and earth, and that would impact the present moment of transforming the world. And we Methodists, we've carried this forward. Sometimes we drop it at times and we get a little bit distracted, but we've carried this forward from the 1700s. Wesley placed people in small groups, like our life groups, and he told them to live this way, to have this optimistic hope, no matter how bad society was, to work for the kingdom of God, like in heaven, to inbreak in the world around them, the world. So as Methodists, we have a basic claim, and I want to remind us of that today. When we align with the work of Christ, then the world can be transformed. It can be transformed. God's business is in renewing creation. That is our work together, working to heal the marks of sin and our human failures. So when we feel all that negativity and we know division and polarization is wrong, our work is to be a part of the healing of the society around us. So Wesley called people to circle up in groups called societies, like our life groups. This is a good plug. I see Bill Gray in the back. A good plug for our life groups. If you're not a part of a life group here at Flourish United Methodist Church, then we want you to be a part of one, because you can do life together. You can be challenged together to do this thing. And in the foundations of our faith, this is where we're going. Wesley said, as you're doing life together, as you have this optimism despite how the world is around you, and you're following the way of Christ, there's some foundational rules that are the way of Christ. And that's where we get these three simple rules that are in this little book that I've commended to you that we're going to talk about. Do no harm. Some of you know these. Do good. Stay in love with God. These are modern kind of language words that Wesley said. As you're seeking the way of Christ, if you ground yourself in these rules of life, then you will transform the world. And this is where our movement began. This is where our roots are. Today we're going to talk just a little bit about do no harm. Interesting that Wesley started with do no harm, right? It's kind of the toughest place and in some ways the easiest. Wesley started with that point of correction. And I have to say to you, when we look at these, I know there's some in the room and that you don't like the word rule. That you like people giving you rules or telling you what to do. There are. I see some of you. Sometimes I'm one of those, I have to admit. But I have to pull back with myself and think, we need guardrails in life. We start teaching our kids these things. Think about it. You start teaching your kids all these things like, you know, don't cross the road without looking. Don't touch the hot stove. You have parameters. Those aren't confining. They're things that are meant to keep you safe and keep you on the right path. And as you grow and mature, you get other ones. You know, you get that, like, you know, stop before you turn and don't drink too much. And goodness sakes, don't drink and drive. And our kids were saying, you know, don't run up the stairs. And goodness gracious, don't do it with scissors. All these things. They're rules that ground us, that give us guardrails. So don't dismiss that rule. We need a rule and way of life to keep us from falling off the rails. That negativity, that polarization where you see like, oh, I thought they were Christian, but look how they're acting. That judgment comes and we're looking. It's falling off the rails. It's falling outside of this. There's so many that don't care that they do harm. This is a basic of the faith. When we love our neighbors, when we seek not to bite and devour one another, then we have to commit, and Wesley believed this, I didn't make it up, to do no harm. Foundationally, that's where we start. That's where we should start every day. That's where we start in a post-election cycle. That's where we should be in all of our days, to do no harm. Do no harm. Now, you can look some of this up. If you're interested, you can read Job. You can look up how Wesley preached about this and taught this. For Wesley days, he had some things that, in his interpretation of doing no harm, I think they stretch into our current moment. Wesley talked about things like gossip. Did harm. Saying false things about other people, that does harm. He talked about things like fighting and quarreling and returning evil for evil. Wesley said, it's a baseline, that does harm. Wesley spoke against drunkenness, it does harm in the society. He talked about unfair business practices, doing harm within society. He spoke against political and social systems. Wesley came to America, to Georgia, in a brief period of time in his ministry and returned to England. And one of the things he did, and this was big for the people called Methodists, is he asked them not to use sugar in their tea. You know, tea time's big for English. I'm a tea drinker. Because in Georgia, he had seen how the slaves were treated on the plantations that were harvesting sugarcane. And so he saw that social thing wrong over here, and he went back to England and said, we can impact change with this. Let's not support this trade because they're shipping their sugar over here. Do no harm at a basis. Bishop Job writes about this in the book. He says this, he says, to do no harm, if you're kind of looking for a basic Christian definition, I think this is a good one. He says, it means I'll be on guard so that all my actions, and even my silence will not add injury to another of God's children or to any part of God's creation. You want to read that with me? To do no harm means that I will be on guard so that all my actions and even my silence will not add injury to another of God's children or to any part of God's creation. That's a powerful statement, church. If we each could live into that's the guardrail, right? That's the guardrail. To keep you falling off the rails, going on the wrong path, following the ways of people that are biting and devouring and pulling this negativity and polarization over us, even over the people of faith, then we need this guardrail. We don't do harm to others. We don't do harm to God's creation. In this heated climate, this divisive place, we need folks that are willing to stay on the path of Christ. And when we do that, like with the Wesleyan movement that stretched just from England and now is all over the world, we have HCW out here as a partner within the Methodist Church in Sierra Leone and in West Africa. When we do that, others are inspired to follow us. That optimistic, no matter what's going on, knowing that if God is at work and I'm trying to do no harm, I'm trying to love God and love God's creation as best I can from my sphere of influence, then something's going to happen because that's God's way. Now, in this do no harm, I've mentioned earlier that we have to examine ourselves, and that's the hard part. That sounds like, oh, it's easy, do no harm. But the hard part is examining ourselves because the way around us is something different. There's a lot of harm being done. Examining ourselves. And in that examine, to do no harm, there's some non-negotiables, folks. There's some non-negotiables for followers of Jesus. There's some things that we should just not say and not do. And maybe we need to make a list. Wesley made a list. It's still in our discipline for the people of his day. And some of that does parallel those gossip and all that things. But there's some different things in our culture that are extensions of that Wesleyan way. One of them is racism. This is non-negotiable. If we're going to love our neighbor, if we're going to love all those around us, then racism is a non-negotiable. If we're going to live and to be in a church of all abilities, all ethnicities, all orientation and all identities, that means all. We love all. We stand for all in this place. And as people who call each other brother and sister and a family, if we're kindred, if we're siblings, non-negotiable. Sexism, non-negotiable. Every person is of equal value in the kingdom of God. And we can list others, right? But we've seen in this campaign where left and right and red and blue have gone off the rails. It means a non-negotiable is that we are concerned. We are concerned like John Wesley was in his day and like Jesus. We've talked about Jesus for so many weeks here this year, like Jesus was for the people on the margins, for those that are sick and hurting and marginalized. That is our heart and our concern as the people of Christ. Whether we fall on the right or the left, there are some things that we just work toward the greater good and we work to lessen the harm. So a path, for a path, you might, how do we not go off the rails? When there's this gravity that pulls, Paul says there's this sin that tries to cling so closely to us that, you know, when you're around some of this, it does stick and it pulls you. It takes work, I have to tell you. It seems easy, right? It seems easy, but it takes work. One of the good things here is that we understand the rule. It's do no harm, right? Sometimes you give your kids a rule and they mess it up and you realize that you made it too complicated, you know, that they didn't get the full thing. This one, I don't think it's so hard. It's hard to do when people are doing something different around you. They're saying, they're posting differently. They're responding to those that are opposed to them in a different way than Jesus would. Hard. But the rule is easy. Do no harm is easy. Rules that make sense, and I hope this one makes sense, is easy for us to follow. And as we follow, we affect change. I have to claim this too for us. As Methodists, we are a people that seek to do no harm. So if you're sitting here today in this church, this is who we are. Again, I'm not making this up. Wesley distilled this love your neighbor as yourself, do unto others. And this is the first place that he set a rule. This is who we are. As Methodists, we are a people who seek to do no harm. So how do you do that? It takes the self-examination. I'm going to give you, Pastor Lauren was talking about ways that you can pray and offer your hopes and pray with pastors and pray with others. I'm going to give you this method that stretches back to the 1500s. And it's a method that goes back to St. Ignatius. It's called daily examine. Some of you former Catholics, you may know this. I've distilled it down to an easy Protestant way. And it makes a lot of sense. So here's what I'm going to offer to you as one way to begin to think, am I doing harm? Have I done harm in the past few weeks? Have I done harm this week? Here's what we do. This daily examine, spelled right, the way Ignatius put it forward. Ignatius says that in the grace of God, that at the end of your day, you ask for grace to see yourself clearly. That's examining yourself. Some point at the end of your day, you look back on your day and you ask for forgiveness for your failures. You acknowledge where you slipped up, where you had that thought, where you didn't speak up and somebody was off the rails around you and you may have needed to speak up. And then in gratitude, you offer thanks for what went right, for all the goodness that you experienced. And if you find that you have failed, then you resolve as a follower of Jesus to do better in the next day. And then you just repeat that. God, in your grace, show me my day today. Have I done harm? Have I offered grace to your world? Have people seen your son through me? And then when we failed, acknowledge that. Acknowledge that with God. Have those holy conversations and ask God to guide you to a different place in the next day. This is a guardrail. Because if you go unchecked and you just keep being influenced by those around you, this overarching negativity and these corners that we pull to and the bad things that we say about right, left, and in between, then you have no check. A small group can help you do that, but really the work is up to you. Examining yourself. And then in this examination, if we are all in this room, quite a few people here today, and in our online worship, if we are all seeking to do no harm, I think that'll make a difference in our community. I really do. I think that'll make a difference in how people see you in these divisive times, how they respond to you. I believe in the stuff of the transformation of the world. This is a church that has been a life-transforming church. Many of you are products of that. And you've been partners to a church that has been a life-saving church. Again, we have helping children worldwide outside our door today. The partnerships that we have had have saved lives. We continue in the space, right, left, middle, apathetic, of being called to transform the world. The basis of that in our Wesleyan way, folks, is to do no harm. So if we can start there and work together over the next few weeks and really in all of our days, then we will impact change just as the early Wesleyans did in society. When we stand for what is right and good, when we follow the way of Jesus in loving neighbor as we love ourselves, when we do unto others as we would have them do unto us, then I see hope. Hope beyond the tears of this week, hope beyond the anger of this week, hope beyond any party. Thanks be to God. Amen.